The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
11 minutes after 6, it is Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Join the conversation at 770-5633-770-KMED. My email is bill@billmyersshow.com. And facebook.com/Bill Myers Show feed is up. And we appreciate you watching or listening. 106.3 KMED in Jackson County. Or KMED, KMED HD1, 106.7 in South Jackson County on the translator there. K290AF, that is Rogue River at 105.9, and Grants Pass at 99.3 KBXG. We appreciate you listening one way or the other. And streamed on KMED.com. So, hey, doing our part to keep you informed here. Big national story, of course, besides what was going on with the confirmation hearings for RFK Jr., is the plane crash yesterday, last night. And was watching that rapidly there for a while. Very sad. And they were talking about it being a rescue mission. Rescue. Now it looks like it's really going to be a recovery. And 67 people presumed dead. They have more than 24 bodies that have been recovered from this. So this was a crash involving American Airlines plane carrying 64 people, military helicopter Black Hawk with three on board. On a training mission, apparently, and this happened near Ronald Reagan National Airport. And so the American Eagle flight, operated by PSA Airlines, was carrying 60 and four crew, and they were on final approach. They were on final approach, and maybe you've seen the video by this time, and I posted some of it on my Facebook account last night, and it seemed pretty obvious. You could see the flashing light, here comes the Black Hawk, and just boom. You know, right into it, explosion, both ended up dropping into the Potomac. And the ATC conversation, you could hear the air traffic controller talking about, hey, you know, do you see the CRJ? In other words, the American Airlines flight, the PSA flight. And here's how that went, a clip from liveatc.net.
CRJ in flight.
Do you see it in flight?
Pass 25, pass one is CRJ.
American 4782 by bath number and visual.
American 4782, Washington, 1-star, 3-2-0-1-7.
You can hear the exclamations in the ATC in the tower, and they're going like, woo, they saw already what had happened.
Tower, did you see that?
American 472. American 3130, go around, turn left in 250, climb maintain 3000. Lucy 5347, go around, climb maintain 3000, flight plan.
3,000, go around, 3,000, blue streak, 5347.
Blackjack 3, can you return to base?
Blackjack 3, I think that's the...
Blackjack 3, proceed directly to Glebe, I need you to land.
Yeah, Blackjack 3, I believe, was the call sign for the Blackhawk. The Blackhawk that ended up striking the commercial airliner. And like I said, just a tragedy. Bunch of people, looks like a skating team coming from Wichita, Kansas, and the plane had departed from Wichita, Kansas, and they don't believe there are any survivors, and right now it's just trying to figure out what happened. Now I know this is Conspiracy Theory Thursday, it's looking, the simplest way of looking at this, you know, Occam's razor is that we're looking at some serious human error on this one, and one of them would even be the altitude of the helicopter. And I'm no expert on flying. I've never flown. I've just flown on flights. You know, that's all I've ever done. But what I've been able to read and discern from what I've been seeing from all the various experts that have been going on and on about this for a number of hours is that the Black Hawk, the normal height or the altitude that should have been flying above the Potomac in that region, it's about 200 feet. That's where they're supposed to be. Well, the airplane was at around 300 feet. It was on final approach, getting ready to land. In fact, they were only maybe 2,500 feet from the runway. They almost made it. I mean, you're just thinking, you know, 1,500 feet one way or the other, it would have made all the difference. Just very sad. A lot of families hurting this morning. Keep them in your prayers. But the Black Hawk apparently high and did not see the airliner. That's what it's looking like right now. Now, there are no cockpit voice recorders in this military jet. They don't have that, so, or that military craft. So it's going to have to be something where they're looking at the externals, the radar, the video, and everything else which is going on. And the other aspect of this about this is the air traffic controller saying, hey, did you see the CRJ? This is, you know, the American Airlines flight. And you didn't hear an answer from the Black Hawk helicopter. But and did you see it? And, you know, asked about this twice. So they realized that there was already a problem there and told them to pass behind, you know, in other words, keep flying, but go behind the airliner. And when you see, and by the way, it's very crowded airspace around Reagan International. If you ever flied in and out, flown in or out of it, there's like a plane going in and out of there every 30 to 45 seconds. It's just amazing. It's quite the machine, really. And I've flown through it a couple of times going to the Federation for American Immigration Reform broadcast. Great airport, very convenient to downtown, which is why all the congressmen and senators end up using that when they're flying in and out of town. But there was another plane taking off at the same time in front of them on a different runway, but still very close. And you could see how maybe they were confused when the tower said, hey, do you see the airliner? And, you know, fly behind the airliner. They're looking at the other airliner that was about the same level that had already taken off. And maybe just human error saying, all right, well, we're behind it. When really they were in front of the second airliner, which was coming in on final approach. Very sad. So we're looking at that. There's also some questions if the training, the military people that were on a training mission, if they were wearing night goggles, which would also reduce your field of vision. There are all sorts of questions right now, not a whole lot of answers. But it would appear that we're looking at human error. And if there's something more nefarious involved, we would probably need a little more serious evidence of it. But that's the way it's looking here so far. I don't know if there's anyone who's listening this morning that's ever flown Blackhawks. Maybe you have done that as part of your military service. I'd love to hear from you and get your perspective on it, because the research that I've read on it and people who text messaged me last night were saying that one of the aspects of flying the Blackhawk is that even at the best, it has pretty severely limited visibility. So I don't know. I've never been in one, but this is just from one source. It was Larry Graves ended up calling about that or text messaged me last night. Former director of the Josephine County Airport. 18 minutes after 6, 770-5633. Hi, good morning. You're on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Hi, who's this?
This is Larry Kendrick. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine, Larry. How are you doing this morning? What's on your mind?
I'm doing good. I'm not an expert on anything, but I spent 24 years in the military. I was a crew chief on helicopters. I was an incident commander here in Medford for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Search and rescue pilot and a squadron commander. And I can tell you this, those helicopter pilots are going to be at fault on this. You got two guys in the helicopter. They were probably had their heads down looking at their instruments if they were flying in a congested area.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy has to always keep his eyes outside the aircraft like that.
Now, there were three people on this crew. And so I don't know what their duties or how their duties would have been divided, but you know, it's a possibility. It appears on, you know, if you're just looking at it from a regular person's perspective, Larry, that that it would be more on the helicopter to have avoided the commercial airplane, right?
I can guarantee they did not have their eyes outside the aircraft, or they would have seen the airplane coming. And that's a regular lane that the aircraft has reserved for them making a landing.
Yeah,
and it is totally on the helicopters. They didn't have their eyes outside the helicopter. They would have seen the airplane coming down. And I've seen this happen. I know a lot of pilots that this have happened to in congested areas. I know of two pilots that flew into a mountain one time, brought up daylight because they had they were using a new system in the aircraft, instruments in the aircraft, and they were not looking outside the aircraft. So this is what those guys did. I guess that's what they're going to come down to. I'll guarantee it.
Okay. Well, like I said, it's really early into the investigation. I'm sure that the one thing I will say that I've noticed that the administration has been really, really good, Larry, at getting whatever information they have, getting it out quickly. which is refreshing rather than circling the wagon. And I'm glad they're being pretty transparent about it. And hopefully we'll find out more as time goes on.
All right, buddy.
Hey, appreciate the call. Appreciate your perspective. We go to next line. Hi, good morning. This is Bill. Who's this?
This is Miner Dave.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, I just got two comments to make. One is Colby. You know Colby. He was a Black Hawk helicopter mechanic. And so he would know how to assess the operability of the helicopter. And he's ridden on them many times in search and rescue.
Yeah, I haven't heard from Colby in probably 2 years, though. You know that?
Right. He lives in Azalea now. And I don't think he can't pick up your thing. And he's kind of withdrawn from politics. He got disillusioned.
Oh,
and so,
yeah. I remember some of the emails that he had sent me at the end were pretty soured on the whole system right now. I remember that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I want to name two nominees for the Collar Hall of Fame, Lynn Barton and Acretia. Lynn Barton for her morals and her steadfastness on her opinions, and Acretia for being an interesting character and consistent.
All right. Very good. We'll certainly consider that nomination, sir. You be well. Thanks for the call, Dave.
All right. Bye.
As far as I was concerned, when I was just joking with Patrick the other day about Talk Radio Caller Hall of Fame, because we were talking about Baseball Hall of Fame the other day in the Diner 62 quiz, and he's saying, hey, you know, all right, Deplorable Patrick, you're member number one. As far as I'm concerned, if you're a caller, you're in the Hall of Fame, all right? Because you're taking the time and the effort to call it. And I have to tell you, I think it, I completely would understand. I know that when I have called talk shows, even as a guest, I'm nervous as all get out. I know you may laugh about this, but, you know, on my show, I'm master of my own domain, so to speak. So I'm in control. I know where things are going. As far as I'm concerned, when you call a talk radio host, a talk radio station, you're really getting out on the edge there. It takes a bit of guts to do that, and I really appreciate that when you do. And and that's why I try to be kind to people, because I'll tell you, the few times I've called a talk show in my life, I was nervous as all get out. Am I going to say the wrong thing? Am I going to be able to get my point across here in a relative fashion? So, and if you wish to do so, you know my number, 770-5633-770-KMED. You can also email Bill at BillMyerShow.com.
Start your morning right.
0.7 KMED.
25 minutes after 6. Received a message from Jude Torres. And Jude writes me, Bill, good morning. I was a Black Hawk crew chief for 10 years. It sounds like pilot error to me. The aircraft actually has pretty good visibility. Sad day. Yeah, I would certainly agree it's a sad day, Jude. Hey, I appreciate your perspective being a crew chief. Like I said, Larry said, Army Black Hawk flew directly into the CRJ-700 short final into runway 33. Now, this from a friend who currently flies H-60s for Cal Fire, same type of aircraft. Visibility of the Black Hawk is notoriously poor, big dash and small windows. Okay. So that is, I'm getting a little bit of a conflicting view there, but I guess what is good visibility? It depends on your point of view. No pun intended, I guess. All right. But like I said, no survivors expected in that. Very sad. And it is looking like error from the Black Hawk, unfortunately. All right. What happened around here? We ended up having a meeting yesterday, Medford Interagency Office. And, of course, the way it was presented by the local media, residents rallying for stronger protections for old-growth forests. The meeting was actually there to talk about three alternative treatment plants, part of the Northwest Forest Forestry Plan. And it is being portrayed, though, is that this was just all about the greens being out. And maybe that's the way it ended up working out. But the U.S. Forest Service proposing changes to the Northwest Forest Plan, and that's what this was all about. And so you had the greens out there rallying. Like I warned you, there was going to be a rallying deal at 5. And Mr. X stopped by there. He told me that it was more like one of those Oregon kitchen table things where they broke people up in groups. I don't know if it's, I wasn't able to attend that meeting last night, so I don't know if that was the way it was or not. But he kind of got there near the end of it. But it's really about public comment at this point. I love one of these lines here. This is in the KOBI5.com story, and I think that, you know, the one on KDRV is pretty similar, though. Logging old forests is not productive. This was a quote from Luke Rudiger with the Applegate-Siskiyou Alliance. That's what he supposedly said. So that's the attitude going into this meeting. Now, you remember, I'm going to repeat this quote because it's like an oldie but a goodie. So Luke Rudiger, Applegate-Siskiyou Alliance, said, logging old forests is not productive. This is the same guy, though, who stands up in a public meeting in the Applegate and says, I love the smell of wildfire smoke in the summertime because I know that the forest is being restored. So you already know what kind of point of view he's coming from. He's coming from the point of view of, we should be burning. We should be burning the forest, not logging the forest, because logging the forest isn't productive, but burning the old forest, that is. And from the looks of the trees that the Applegate-Siskiyou Alliance never want to see a chainsaw touch, the ones that are dead out in the Applegate, they're probably going to be getting a lot more of that smell of wildfire smoke restoring the barren landscape. Just saying. So it's pretty much a wash, rinse, repeat with the Greens being silly and grabbing all of the headlines, holding their signs out in front on Biddle Road. Now tonight from 7 till 9, going to be a meeting at the Josephine County Fairgrounds about the wildfire map law, Senate Bill 762. Commissioner Ron Smith will be there. Also know that Bob Hart, the retired land use consultant, is going to be there talking about the options for appeal and various other things. I'm also aware of people who are working on, well, they're just reading, I'm just going to keep it this way. Once again, reading the law, looking at the law, and there may be some real flaws in this law that could be smacking the state in its face. That's all I'm going to say. I've read some of the claims. I'm just going to leave it at that. But there appear to be some holes in this law big enough to drive a bunch of attorneys through. Maybe. Like I said, a fella can dream, Kenny, about the tyranny. And once again, remember, Senator Jeff Golden ended up sponsoring this bill and carrying it, and Representative Pam Marsh ended up doing it on the House side. Meanwhile, Senator Jeff Golden wants to have a constitutional amendment guaranteeing you a, what is it, what is this one? Here's the one from Ashland.News. Oregon State Senator Jeff Golden has sponsored a legislative effort that would seek to enshrine a clean, safe, and healthy environment amendment in the Oregon Constitution. And I'm sure that Senator Jeff Golden would be the one that would be in judge of what is a clean, safe, and healthy environment, you know, according to Jeff. And he says, if we have it on the books, agencies will get more rigorous and will not be quite as quick to approve projects that have environmental consequences, which I would imagine in Jeff's world is every project. What kind of danger could you have from such one? We will guarantee you a clean, healthy, and safe environment. It will be a right. At what cost and who will be paying? We'll have to talk with Senator Golden about that, and we will next week. He did agree to come on the program. Sometimes I wish Jeff would work for Southern Oregon. I wish he would go to work for Southern Oregon and actually do something that would actually help us, rather than punishing us. But Jeff seems to be big in punishing us, and I'm going to have to ask him about that. This is the Bill Meyer Show, 631. KMED. 99.3 KBXG.
Crater Lake Medford Mazda invites you to...
This is the Bill Meyers Show on 106.3 KMED.
6:37. I appreciate you waking up this morning. One of President Trump's executive orders is about protecting kids from chemical and surgical mutilation. In other words, getting them out of the grasps of the transgender craze. It has been. Oregon is... imagine trying to find ways to do a workaround because it's, I mean, transgenderism is practically a state religion, especially in the Oregon Department of Education, just from my observations. I want to talk with Elena Barbera about this. She's also known as the Based Mother. How you doing, Elena? Welcome to the show.
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
For those that don't know, what does the term based mean? You'll hear that every now and then in online discussions, and a lot of people, even my wife the other day, said, what does based mean, Bill? So what does it mean?
It just means somebody that tells it like it is, somebody who tells the truth without sugarcoating it.
In other words, you have consumed the red pill and swallowed with glee, right? That kind of thing.
Exactly. I mean, you have to, when you hang out with the kids, you have to have your Urban Dictionary handy.
Uh-huh.
That's the website.
Okay, very good. So hey, what's your website, too? Do you have a website or social media or various other things? Where can people find out more about you?
Yeah, so the website for my film is AmericanGroomerFilm.com. And there are links there to all my socials. And I'm at The Based Mother on all the typical social medias, Instagram, Twitter, et cetera, TikTok, et cetera.
And essentially, you are a big advocate for parental rights and anti-grooming. Christian mom, author, and this documentary film, which you have out called American Groomer. Is it about transgenderism specifically, or are there other aspects when you talk about American Groomer?
Yeah, right. So American Groomer, the film, focuses a little bit on transgenderism, but it's primarily about the pornographic books that are in American schools.
Mm.
And that is actually a thing in all 50 states. People think it's just a blue state thing, but it certainly isn't.
Well, I'm glad it's certainly a big thing in the blue state here of Oregon. It's well, of course, Oregon is a very red state, actually, controlled by a very small section of high population blues. I mean, that's the way, you know, that it works here. Which state do you live in, by the way?
Currently, I'm in Florida.
Okay, in Florida. Okay. Relatively free state in many ways.
Well, I moved here from Massachusetts for that reason.
Holy moly. That makes Oregon look like a freedom for sure. Okay, yeah. Oh, man, Massachusetts, very oppressive here. But the bottom line here, though, if you're really going after these books in the schools and the schools' libraries, we have a lot of people working on that here, too. And I think that people need to probably watch your documentary for this reason. And I have, I mean, I'm no prude. I know that they have sex education in the schools. They've been having that a long time, even when I was a kid. You know, they were doing that back in the 1970s. But we were never given reading materials, which in essence, with illustrations of young boys growing up and then giving one another, for lack of a better term, the sexual act made famous by Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. You know what I'm getting at? That sort of thing.
I do.
Mm-hmm. And
I do. And here we are, adults, talking about it and having to use an obscure reference, but yet they're being extremely graphic with children in middle schools and high schools, and in some cases now in elementary schools around the country. They'll talk about it directly with a child, but you and I won't even talk about it with each other.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to do this on the air. So we just say, you know, they're, you know, in other words, you're saying that the system that is in the public schools right now is about pushing them toward aberrant behavior. Would that be a fair assessment? Is that kind of where you're coming from, Elena?
And it's perfectly clear. It's perfectly clear. It's normalizing it. It's teaching them that you can have sexual relations at any age, with anyone, and you don't have to be monogamous. You know, you could just be you and, you know, just indulge in whatever it is you want. And they teach them everything from explicit masturbation techniques. There's one book that talks about how everybody from all ages, babies, children, and even the elderly. So now kids are looking at everyone as a sexual being. I mean, I never thought about my grandparents like that, and I still don't want to. And the level, you know, how to take nudes of yourself and not get in trouble.
There are books in the schools how to take nudes of yourself? Really?
There's one book called Let's Talk About It. Yep, which teaches children how to take nudes and, you know, cover up identifying marks so you don't get in trouble, so you can share them because it's naughty and fun.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and here it is. I felt bad about having to get undressed in front of other guys in a locker room. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So they start. So where the transgenderism comes in is they're starting in pre-K. I have board books, actual, like, for babies that talk about gender and, you know, and pronouns. And they start there getting kids, you know, concerned about their genitals and how do you feel about that? And your parents may have gotten your gender wrong. And then they escalate very quickly as the grades go up into sexual attraction. I mean, by kindergarten, you know, who do you have a crush on type things. And then they move very quickly into explicit, when I say obscenely vulgar triple X materials that I have found in American schools, it would make your head spin, and you would probably get a ding on your broadcasting license if I read some of this stuff on air.
Yeah. Well, on the other hand, you are talking about something which is in the news, so I think that actually, but just out of propriety, I think it'd be better just to hold off of that. Here it is. These books, and I've seen enough of these books here, samples that have been sent to me by other concerned parents. These are books that just a few years ago would normally get an adult busted for kind of pushing child pornography. Am I wrong about that? You know, that kind of assumption?
Unfortunately, you are, because back in the 50s, starting in the 50s, we created around the country what are called obscenity exemption statutes. And about three quarters of states still have them, where basically if you show pornography to a child at the mall or a coffee shop, you could be hit criminally. You could be criminally charged, leave in handcuffs. But if you take that same pornography and that same child across the threshold into a library or a school, you are exempted from criminal prosecution because you can say that it's educational. And that is no matter how vulgar the pornography. I mean, think of the worst thing you can think of, and no matter how young the child, that exemption still exists.
And this is what you're dealing with then in your documentary, American Groomer, right?
Yes. It's very shocking. That was probably the most shocking thing I learned in making the documentary.
And do you have people shooting back at you saying, Elena, you know, the problem is, you know, you're just not wanting people to be free. You're not wanting us allowed to express ourselves to one another. You don't want us to be who we are. That's another term I hear a lot. You know, we need to be allowed to be who we are, that kind of thing.
Right. And of course I hear that. And I say, that's great, you know, but we have decades of science and research that prove that children who are exposed to sexual content grow up, end up being sexually abused either by each other, or they're primed and ready to be sexually abused by an adult, and they grow up traumatized. This isn't just me being a prude. You know, I grew up, I was born in the 70s. I grew up through the 80s and the 90s. I've seen a lot. You know what I mean? It's not like and to be, you know, to be accused of being a prude because all of a sudden teachers unions and the American Library Association want to sexualize children. No, this isn't a me problem. This is a you problem. That's kind of my answer.
Now, what is driving the teachers unions and the educational establishment to go down this road? Have you been able to maybe tease out, because I'll ask a lot of people this, where did this come from? Because it's not exactly like there's been a, well, of course, I don't know. Is it something as simple as the people who want to have sex with kids want to normalize it every more? I think of, the Man Boy Love Association, NAMBLA, as an example. And as I jokingly say on the air, it's like, I love little kids. No, I really love little kids. You know, the people we used to call perverts. That kind of thing.
Yes, that's exactly it. It's an effort to normalize pedophilia. And we can see it in the books, we can see it in their actions, in the curriculums. We can see it in our society, in the music. We see it everywhere. We saw that bishop last week who gave a speech to Donald Trump during the National Prayer Service. She talked about gay and lesbian children. When did it become okay for clergy to talk about who children are sexually attracted to? I mean, it's everywhere. And we have to put a huge wall around our children as parents and grandparents and protect them from what the world is trying to do.
How do you put that wall around them in today's world?
Well, there are a lot of ways. First of all, I really, if I had a younger child right now, I would get them off the internet. It would be that simple. I'm sorry. You know, you could say, people would say things like, oh, if you don't give your kid that, they'll end up being weird. I'm like, no, the kids who are on the internet are the ones who ending up being weird.
I have to remember that one, the ones that are on the net. Hey, we're all there at this point. You know,
and we're all weirder than we used to be.
Okay, so you don't think there's any way to keep them off of particular sites or such? Because the one thing I'll say is that the internet is a tool. It is an amazing tool in some ways, too. In fact, it's a tool which allows you to distribute American Groomer, you know, your documentary. So how bad can the internet be? I mean, how do you draw that
line? I don't say that the internet itself needs to be banned. I say that parents need to control what their children are on the internet and the amount of time that they're on the internet and whether or not they're supervised. Because even with parental controls, so much gets through. Another way to protect your children, if you have the means, put them in a private school or homeschool them. Mm-hmm. That's why homeschooling and private school enrollment are up. Because what's happening in the public schools, parents are starting to wake up to it, in my opinion, not fast enough. If we all pull our kids out, the system will collapse, the funding will dry up. Randy Weingarten, the teachers union head, will lose her $500,000 plus a year salary. So there's these people have a lot to lose, and we actually have the power as parents, and we just need to wield it.
You know something, Elena, I was joking with a person the other day. We were talking about public education, a gentleman locally who's working on local public education reform. And I said, could it be that simple that the teachers union would actually start looking out for the kids if we just made them all teachers union members and paid dues? Do you think that maybe they would actually do what parents wanted if we were paying dues to them? Could it be that simple?
If we were, I really don't know, because I think they like having political power.
Yeah.
So they really like being in bed with the politicians. And I don't know that they would actually answer to us, because what they've done so far is to alienate parents, push them out of the schools. I mean, this started back in the 70s with busing. It was the greatest, most, PSYOP. They said it was about race and about equal opportunity. No, what it was really about, in my opinion, was separating parents from the schools. Because when your kid is way on the other side of town, you can't pop in. The teacher doesn't know your face. You can't be asking questions every day.
You know, that's an interesting perspective. I never really thought of it that way. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because they did a really good marketing job on that one.
Yeah, you keep the kids out of the neighborhood. Parents aren't able to drop in the neighborhood school or even get involved or even feel an attachment to a neighborhood school, right?
Right. All right. Right. So they're not interested, really. And even if we paid them, they would take our money, but they still wouldn't listen.
Okay. All right. We'll set that one aside. Now, what do you think about President Trump's executive order protecting children from chemical and surgical mutilation? Does it go far enough? Or what do you think?
I actually have to tell you, like, I broke into tears when it came out, because it felt like such a victory for, you know, we've been out here, and I've only been in this fight for a couple of years. There have been people out here for years doing so much more than I ever have, and trying to wake people up to the reality of what this is. You know, one of the things he said in the order was the government is going to immediately stop relying on junk science, like that comes from WPATH, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. I mean, those, they create the standards that doctors rely on, but their standards, we have found out, somebody pulled the curtain back, and it's all lies.
Yeah, this whole so-called scientific position on transgender, and we got science there, and it's in essence, in fact, I guess you're right, people have gone and investigated, and it's politics is all it is. It's a political push is what it was.
Absolutely. So and you know what else it is? For every American, like your listeners, you, me, I take this very personally, that my tax dollars have been contributing to the mutilation of children and to the brainwashing of children and confusing them. And more of them are coming out as quote unquote detransitioners, because they realize that they were talked into something that wasn't real, wasn't feasible. You cannot change your sex, no matter how hard you try. And, you know, and now they have mutilated bodies, they're sterilized. And to think that I work every day to chip in for that, it turns my stomach. And he's stopping that right now.
I would also say that I think that part of this was also that nefarious agenda behind the scenes. And I'm not directly connecting World Economic Forum, but it's the kind of thinking that drives the World Economic Forum, is that humans are the problem. Humans are the cancer on the earth, so we need fewer humans. What better way to have fewer of them is to get them sterilized or get them sexually confused and get them not forming families. I think it's all, you know, connected, one and the same.
That's exactly right. And in these books, some of these books that I read about sex and the vulgarity is paired with this breakdown of the family ideology. You know, your family may not understand you, but don't worry, because you can abandon them and choose your own family.
Yes. Have you noticed really the push here? This has been going on about 20, 25 years now, where your family is crap, but your friends. That's your family. I've noticed that trend for a long time. That really has concerned me. That seemed to be an open attempt at breaking up family bonds, really.
Every single thing, if you look at it, you can trace back the roots. It used to start, it started with you'd have a friend and they started saying, well, that's your, they're practically family, right? And then little by little, those friends become the family and you abandon the family. Back in the 70s or 80s, when we started talking about self-esteem, that became a thing. Now it's turned into self-idolatry, pleasure at all costs. It doesn't matter who I hurt. I must do what I want to do. And which is not only, you know, dangerous, it is ungodly. And every single thing has these roots that sound nice and innocent.
President Trump's President Trump's executive order, it could be reversed the next president. Are you aware of any ability or any effort, rather, being made to codify what President Trump put in his executive order? Because it's only going to be legislation that will stop it, because otherwise the perverts and the groomers are going to get right back in and keep doing what they did.
Yeah, in all the executive orders that I read regarding children, this one and the indoctrination, he's talking about, you know, putting laws on the books that will codify as much of this as is legally possible. For example, he wants to make a legal pathway for families to sue sanctuary gender-affirming care states, like Minnesota, where Tim Walz is governor. They actually have what I call state-sanctioned kidnapping, where if a parent doesn't want to gender transition the child, the state will take custody. And this is, they'll take custody of a child from any state. They'll take a kid from Oregon if they want to.
I think that Oregon has a variation on that, if I recall. I'd have to look. There have been so many crazy laws coming out of Oregon, it's hard to keep track of it. But I think there is something about that. Maybe it had to do with abortion. It may have been about abortion. In which we'll practically pay to abort everybody else's baby, you know, in this state.
Yeah, a sanctuary state for horrors is what it is. And what he wants to do is put laws into place to make it so that they can be held accountable.
All right, very good.
And it's gonna take a lot of work. This is a huge step in the right direction, and amazing to have the most powerful person on earth finally standing up for our children.
Elena Barbera, also known as the Based Mother. And you can find out more about this this American Groomer documentary. It's a pretty simple web address, AmericanGroomerFilm.com. How much does it cost to view or watch? Could you tell me?
I made this film free because it's extremely important that everybody knows what's going on.
Okay. Free is a good price, especially if you want it out there. And it's worth a heck of a lot more than that from the sounds of it. Well, I have you back there, Elena. And thanks so much for sharing your thoughts on it this morning, okay? Be well.
Thanks for having me.
It's 5 before 7 at KMED and 99.3 KBXG. Waking up with the Bill Meyer Show. It is AmericanGroomerFilm.com.
Rev up.
It's the Bill Meyer Show on KMED, Southern Oregon's place to talk.
3 before 7, Ryan McMakin will join me from the Mises Institute. Like I mentioned yesterday, President Trump driving a lot of our stories this morning on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. But he has a piece in LouRockwell.com. In fact, there is no such thing as settled law. It has to do with all these people saying, oh, no, birthright citizenship. It's been settled law. And McMakin, of course, is with Mises Institute, legal guy, and says that's absolute nonsense. And he actually goes down the rabbit hole on it. Really good article. We'll talk with him about that here coming up in a few. Matt's in Grants Pass. Hey, Matt, how you doing this morning? Welcome. Matt? Sorry about that. I thought I had you on the. Now I got you on. How you doing, Matt?
Oh, okay, good. Hey, I got a favor to ask. I want to find out if any of your other listeners received a survey. It's a survey for the state of Oregon from a company called ICF.
Mm-hmm.
And I was curious, so I logged into it. They give you the option of not answering some of the questions, so I was able to flip through most of it. Very bizarre. It starts out by asking about my relationship with law enforcement. My local law enforcement. Then it jumps from there to how do I identify?
Oh, really?
Then it jumps into if I've been abused, had my hair pulled, if I've been beaten, was it by somebody I know? And then it gets into my sexuality.
Does this seem like it's trying to gin up some lawsuits against uh, against government based on they think that the cops are, what, attacking the trannies and the gays and the lesbians? Is that the implied threat here?
That's how it came to me. What I was thinking of doing is scanning the document, emailing it to you, and you can use the code on here, log into the survey yourself, and then you can get a better sense for what's on there.
Do you know what the company is behind it? Do you know? Can you tell?
I looked up ICF, and I've got it here in front of me. And it says, I'll just read you this quick paragraph. It says, for more than 40 years, we've demonstrated design methodology and statistical knowledge to the implementation of large and complex survey research projects.
Oh.
Our clients consist of blah, 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 blah. Above that, it says ICF offers comprehensive survey research services that empower clients to gain valuable and actionable insights on their issue. And then it has a little link down there that says health research.
Huh. Health research.
But, yeah. I mean, just look, you've read enough surveys. I'm sure your listeners are smarter than the average person anyway, but when you read through the survey, you read through the questions, you can tell the direction they're leading you. And some people would go through it and just say, oh, that's weird that they put these things together. But anybody with any background and knowledge of what's going on in Oregon the last 20 years will look at it and say, oh, okay, that's what you're doing.
Well, I'm sure they're trying to gin up a survey so they can come out, and then you have KOBI and KDRV and the Rogue Valley Times and the Daily Courier, and you have the Oregonian and everybody else talking about Oregon police officers bigots against the LGBTQ community. You know it. That's what's going on.
That's the bottom line. And I want to throw something in. It has to do with the gal you just interviewed. The Healthy Teen Survey, I remember you and I talked a couple of years ago, and it was about this number, the 22.1% of 11th graders who identify as not straight. Not straight. I kept hearing that number, 22.1, mm-hmm. which was their justification for pushing the sexuality research and all the grooming and the other kinds of things. And it's the same thing. When you read that survey, the survey says, oh, how often do you brush your teeth? Do you have sex with boys? How often do you take a shower? Do you identify as something other than your assigned birth?
Uh-huh. Right? So they're mixing all of the alternative sexual terms and questions in the midst of other normal questions, right?
Yeah, and it's going to get worse. But when you go to Oregon Department of Education website, the word is not sex education, it's sexuality education.
Uh-huh. So sexuality education is definitely a different kettle of fish, and they're looking for the new man or woman. Oh, I guess no man or woman. They don't really want men or women. I don't think they want that.
Yeah, well,
I think they want sexually ambiguous people who will not reproduce. Honestly, I think that's really what they're looking for. Okay.
Well, if any of your other listeners got this survey, I'd like to hear from them and get their take on it.
All right. Why don't you scan it, though? Scan it and send it off to me, man. Okay. All right.
Catch you later.
All right. See, that's a great Conspiracy Theory Thursday call. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Yeah, Ron.
Hey, Ron. What's up?
Hey, our current cars, most of them have the cameras on them, and they even have self-parking that is smart parking built into them, which means there's situational awareness around them and gives the car a chance to drive. What's wrong with putting some of those on aircraft so that you look left, right, up, down, backwards, so that and it shows up on a screen in the cockpit area so that the people who are driving the plane know what the hell's going on, and they can even zoom in to find out how far away they are, what angle they are, and so forth.
I think there is a certain amount of that automated even right now, at least in the commercial airplane. What I'm not aware of is if the Black Hawk would have that. You know, the military craft were operating under a different set of circumstances, as you can imagine, in the training aspect of it.
Well, it seems rather strange to me that they're in commercial areas and that they should also have that kind of capability because, as we've seen now, they're not aware of everything around them or they're too busy doing whatever they're doing.
Yeah, could be. I don't have an answer for that yet, but it's an interesting perspective. Thanks for calling, Ron. And let me go to the next one. Hi, KMED. Who's this?
Hey, Bill, is this me?
Yeah, it sure is.
Okay, Steve, Sunny Valley.
Hi, Steve.
I am a pilot, and I watched a very interesting video by Juan Brown on the Blancario channel. And
oh, he's a great analyst on YouTube when it comes to the airplane issues.
He's a commercial pilot, so
yeah.
He has more experience than I do on Class B airspace, which is what's around Reagan. But the thing happened at 400 feet, and below 1,000 feet, you don't get the avoidance message because there's no room to dive, essentially.
Oh, that's very interesting. And so, and this happened, what, about the crash was about 300 feet, right? The mid-air collision, right?
About 400, according to one.
Okay, I missed that. I missed what you said there, Steve. The phone cut out a little bit. What was it, about 400 feet?
Right. And ATC told the helicopter to go behind the American Airlines plane, and they said they would, but then they didn't.
Oh, now, was this the other theory I've heard talked about on the show I was watching last night, in which they thought they were going behind the plane that was taking off to their right, you know, that was taking off at about at exactly the same time? What do you think?
Right, right. And you could see it in the video.
Mm-hmm.
But it was obviously they were looking at the wrong plane.
Yeah.
And I think they were just too busy in the cockpit and didn't have their heads on a swivel. When you're flying at approach altitude off the end of a runway, you really need to be looking around.
Yeah. And that's a pretty busy airspace from what I understand. Every, 30, 40 seconds, there's something taking off or landing there, right?
Yeah. I listened to a little bit of the transmissions from ATC, and they were talking to everybody all the time.
Yeah. Hey, I appreciate, Steve, the pilot's perspective on that. I think we're just going to find out that it's just, you know, the proverbial excrement happens. Very sad to say. But
I don't think there should be a path for the helicopter, which just left its base right off the end of the approach of the runway.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to be real good planning. I will agree with you on that. Yeah. Appreciate the call, Steve. Thanks for that. 6 after 7. KMED, KMED, HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. And we'll check town hall news here in just a moment. The 14th Amendment, birthright citizenship, settled law. Ryan McMakin from Mises says, no way, Jack.
Crater Lake.